We are ready to start. You can call in the candidate. Good morning, Dr. Mbava. Is that how you pronounce your surname?
Yes, good morning, Chef. This is Dr. Mbava.
Thank you very much. Good morning again, Dr. Mbava. My name is, you can switch off your mask. Please try and keep your mask on, if you don't mind. If you are limited by the mask, the sanitizer, sanitize the mic, sanitize your hands. We do honor the COVID-19 protocols very strictly. But your area has been sanitized. My name is Tina Jumat-Peterson. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police. On my left is Mr. Gershwin Dixon. He's Mr. Dixon. He's the secretary to the interviews, and Ms. Nobisutu Sahau, she's also the secretary and additional support staff. Mr. Lobby is also support staff. To my right, and opposite, directly opposite to you, we have the panel. They are all members of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Please do not feel intimidated by them. It is just for them to see you easily. But this is not a judgment, it's a panel, you're not in court. This is a safe space, it's a people's parliament. And we thank you for responding to the interview and allowing yourself to be interviewed. The interview panel will now introduce themselves. To my right, Honorable Majosi will start.
Good morning, Dr. Mbava. My name is Sandile Majosi. And from Inkatha Freedom Party.
Good morning, ma'am. My name is Patricia. Surname is Peacock from the ANC.
Good morning, Dr. Mbawa. My name is Honorable Linda Moss. I'm from the African National Congress.
Good morning, Doctor. I'm Okutter Blanche, and I'm from the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning, Doc. I'm Henry Andres Shembeni from the Economic Freedom Fighters. Thank you.
Dumela Doc Gilner Kenneth Mishre from the ACDP.
Good morning, Madam Dr. Mbava. My name is A.M. Sheikh Imam from the National Freedom Party.
Thank you very much. Then again, the speaker has referred the appointment of the private sector and civil society of members of the Critical Infrastructure Council to the Portfolio Committee on Police. So we have shortlisted 20 candidates, and you are part of those 20 candidates who were shortlisted. As the process of preparing for the interviews, you were vetted. Another process of vetting will obviously occur once you are appointed, a more detailed process of vetting. You will also be joining officials of government. Out of the 10 that we shortlist, the minister will appoint 5, it's a process from here to take it to the National Assembly. These members have sacrificed their recess period. During recess, they normally do political work, they go home, they go to their constituencies. But because of the urgency of interviewing the panel, we have convened for the 3 days. Today is day two, and we will interview 7 candidates today. You would be expected to respond to us. We give all the candidates the same questions. So there's equality, there's transparency. The interview is being recorded. However, it is not live. So any candidate who comes after you does not have an unfair advantage, and you are in no way disadvantaged. We will air the interview once all the interviews have taken place. So just as a way of introducing yourself, Dr. Mbava, could you just maybe explain to me why you think you are the most suitable person for this position, and what kind of qualities you would bring to this, your qualifications which you acquired, your experience, what do you think would make you most suitable, and the additional benefits that you bring to such a critical infrastructure council?
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. It's a great pleasure for me to be here this morning. Chairperson, when I saw the advertised call for board members or council members to sit on this council, I looked at the requirements, and then I looked also at what it is that I can contribute, because my mission is to contribute to better government. As a former public servant, I used to work in government about 5 years ago, or more than 5 years ago, and I was a senior manager in public entities, about 2 entities, where I was accountable for monitoring and evaluation of organizational performance, risk management, and I subsequently followed my ambition to pursue my academic goals, and I went to academia. The reason why I went to academia is because at the time when I was in the public sector, there was a call for government to be accountable and demonstrate quite visibly the impact of government programs. And at the time, there was a requirement to do evaluations, and there was no capacity internally within my entity to do that. And as an official that was responsible for monitoring and evaluation, I did not have the understanding of what is evaluation, so that's why I went to study evaluation. So for this particular call, for the Act on Critical Infrastructure, there is a clear requirement for evaluation, monitoring, assessment of infrastructure of government in terms of the security thereof, and what infrastructure should be categorized as critical. And also there is a call for one has to know what is risk management and risk categories. So in my previous role, I developed risk management frameworks. So I think that ability to understand risk is quite critical in my skill set. I've also sat in audit and risk committees where I assess the risk of the entities as part of good governance. So on the risk side, I'm quite comfortable. And also on monitoring and evaluation, I'm an expert on that. It's my research interest, it's what I continue to do. So I think I bring that holistic expertise to this council. fiduciary responsibility is something that I know of. Good governance is something that I'm quite comfortable with. And I think that my skill set and my senior managerial experience and my academic qualification makes me a suitable candidate, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you consider yourself to be youth?
You know, Chairperson, sometimes...
What do you as youth?
You never know. You always think that you are forever young, but my children always remind me that, Mom, you're older. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable Pico.
Thank you, Chairperson. On your introduction, I've managed to pick up that you do understand the role of the Critical Infrastructure Council, as well as how it should function in order to protect the country. But then what I need to understand is, what do you think is the overall intention of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act? What is its overall intention? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Majozi. So according to the Act, this Act, obviously, it's...
Sorry, it's Peacock.
Oh, Peacock. Thank you so much, Honorable Peacock. when I read the Act to understand why are we here, why do we have a Critical Infrastructure Act and subsequently a Critical Infrastructure Council, in my understanding is that in the past there was the National Key Point Act, which was found to be not suitable in a post-apartheid era. It had draconian aspects to it. And so there was a call to make the identification of critical infrastructure to be more transparent. So in the past, it was not clear how government buildings, how systems, how government structures were identified as critical. So that responsibility was a bit unclear. So, and the responsibility for doing that was not seen as democratic. So in this Act now, what we're saying is that we want a public-private sector approach where we have the private sector, we have civil society, we have government working together to clearly and coherently identify what are those critical infrastructures and to have a clear criteria as well to say this is how we came to conclude that this this building or this center or this establishment or this facility or installation is critical. So we will have a clear criteria. So that is my understanding, Honorable Peacock, that the Infrastructure Council will be the one that will advise the minister on what infrastructure is critical based on a clear criteria and based on quite a clear risk category. Thank you so much, Honorable Peacock.
Thank you, Honorable Peacock. Do you have a follow-up? You happy? Any other member? Do you have a follow-up question? Could we then allow Honorable Shembeni to ask the next question?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to know if, according to you, is the public allowed into the infrastructure or the critical infrastructure, and are they allowed or free to take photos or photographs into the critical infrastructure, according to your understanding? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Shambeni. I think in the Act, it does specify that the public is not allowed to take pictures. But from the comments which were submitted by various stakeholders during the bill, when it was under consultation, it was quite a contentious point to say that now how you can't take a picture. Can you take a picture, for instance, of the question when I was reading through the literature? Can you take a picture, for instance, of Parliament or even of Mandela, his statue? Is that a crime? But I think with the council, Honorable Shembeni, is that we will have to make judgments, judicious judgments, obviously. I think one will not be allowed, obviously, to take pictures of sensitive security apparatus. But peripheral buildings, like outside, that are not posing a security risk, I don't think that will be a problem. But I think the person who is in charge of that critical infrastructure will probably have to make a call as to what is permissible to be photographed and what isn't. But in the Act, it's quite clear that no photographs may be taken of critical infrastructure, like sensitive security aspects thereof. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Shembeni. Would you like a follow-up? Any other member?
Chairperson, I wanted to find out if the doctor can give us two types, that is different types of, according to her knowledge, of the critical infrastructure where the security might be tied to say, here you cannot take photos, and here you can take photos, as you have made an example of Parliament. But any other area where it's strictly no photos, as far as you know. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to respond to that, please?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Shembeni, I can think, for instance, ESCOM, where there's generation of electricity, where the public is not allowed, probably that could be a critical infrastructure, or an army base, or a base of government, a public shouldn't be allowed there to take pictures. Those are the sort of examples I can think of, or even Transnet, its internal workings, one wouldn't be allowed to take pictures. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Honorable Mason.
Dr. Mbaba, how best will that message be communicated to people, particularly those who have been in Parliament? They've taken the pictures of former President Mandela, they've taken pictures all over. So, in your opinion, to make sure that there is no confusion, there is clarity, when people visit, obviously they will be having cameras, how best are you suggesting should that be communicated to people so that they know they cannot be allowed to do, take pictures if they want to take pictures?
Thank you, Honorable Meshwe. I think in the Act, it does specify that there is a person who is in charge of that critical infrastructure. So the person in charge of that critical infrastructure, guided by the Act, will have to make clear guidelines for visitors to tell them what is allowable, what is not allowable. obviously they will have to make judgment calls, not to be obviously to undermine the act, but at the same time so that people know that you can take a picture of Mandela if it doesn't pose a security risk, but there are areas where you cannot take pictures. So I think Honorable Measure, the onus lies on the custodian of that security infrastructure to specify what is permissible and not permissible.
Honorable Measure?
Would you be favorable that there be postings and notices all over so that people would know here they are allowed to take pictures or here they are not allowed to take pictures? Because the person who is the custodian of the structure cannot be everywhere. So how are you going to ensure that that person is able to protect what should not be taken pictures of?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Measure. I think having those clear and visible notices on the premises will be very helpful to guide the visitors so that they can know that should they take pictures of something that is not supposed to be photographed, then they are liable to a fine or to imprisonment. So there should be clear and visible pictures, or notices, or announcements to visitors to say you are allowed to take pictures you are allowed to take pictures within these parameters, but outside these parameters you are not allowed to take pictures. Otherwise, people can find themselves, being fined or against the law. Thank you, Mr. Mesh.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. You have an opportunity now to ask the question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Doctor, what do you believe is the role of the police and the security agencies with respect to critical infrastructure?
Thank you so much, Honorable Sheikh Imam. I think they are the ones who will identify those buildings, those centers. So they will receive the application. So they will receive the applications from those who have applied, and then they will make an assessment, sending their inspectors there, and then compiling a report or submitting an application to the council. So their role is to submit the application to the council, because ultimately it is the council who must make that decision and advise the minister. So the role of the police is to administer the act, to actually do the applications in terms of verifying the information in the application, understanding why is this building required to be a critical infrastructure, and then if they are happy with the information they have received and they want to support the application, then they support it by submitting all that information to council. And now it will be the turn of council now to interrogate that information and make a decision and advise the minister. Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Honorable Sheikh Imam?
Thank you, Chair. Is it not the other way around, ma'am? That it's the council, together with all the other relevant role players, because some of these key points or critical infrastructure will fall under maybe police, some may fall under water and sanitation, some may fall under arts and culture, some. Is it not the responsibility of the council to identify and get the assistance of all the other departments like police, to ensure its security and its safety and things, together with the security agencies who deal with the issues of intelligence, where there's a threat and whether there will be a threat or not? So is it not really the other way around, where the council has the greater responsibility to ensure that these security agencies like police and all of them are in control of the situation and will advise you accordingly? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Sheikh Imam. That is indeed the idea. It should work like that. But I'm saying in terms of the process, how the application gets to council, it will get to them via the Commissioner of Police. So the Commissioner of Police will actually submit the application to council, and then council then will interrogate. Obviously, council has an oversight of the entire process, that is correct. But the actual detailed process is that the Commissioner of Police, having administered the act, will submit the application to council, and then council will actually interrogate those.
Honourable Majosi.
Thank you, Chair. Mine would be on the security agencies. How do you think, what is their role, and in terms of working with police, how do you think the council, the security agencies and police should be working together in making sure that the critical infrastructure is secured at all times, and maybe critical issues are taken care of? I heard you speaking about the police administering the act, and maybe the commissioner also giving information to the council, but the role of the security agency in this manner.
Thank you so much, Honorable Peacock. I think because this is a public-private partnership, everybody works together. So the role, in my understanding, of the security side of it is that they will make sure that there are no threats to the critical infrastructure. They will make sure that they provide physical security, including ICT security, if there are issues around cyber security. So they will work hand in hand with the police, civil society, and all stakeholders to ensure that critical infrastructure is secured physically, and the community, if it's there's IT related security threats, those will also be protected. So that is the role that I see of them playing, the security side. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question, Honorable Majosi.
Oh yeah, Dr. Mava, this is Honorable Majosi, and that is Honorable Peacock.
I tried to explain to her earlier, you know, you don't need to be...
Maybe we look alike, I don't know.
No, she's nervous. Doc, I think we are all human, eh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, don't be nervous, like, especially around me, you don't have to. In your opinion, what are the key challenges facing the council, and what role should the council play in strengthening critical infrastructure?
Thank you so much, Honorable Member. I think because the Act is broader than the previous National Key Point Act in terms of what is essentially a critical infrastructure, the risk is that now everything and everything can be called a critical infrastructure. So the council has to be very, very judicious in applying the act, using their own judgment as well, and using the guidelines in the act to be able to say, no, that is not a critical infrastructure, because everything can end up being a critical infrastructure, basically. So that is the risk that everyone will submit what they think should be considered as a critical infrastructure. Because if you look at the Act, it's much broader in terms of identifying critical infrastructure. So even though there are clear guidelines, I think there is a possibility that the council will be flooded with all these applications for buildings and structures and premises and systems to be categorized as critical infrastructure. So the council must have the knowledge and the ability to apply this act in a very judicious manner and to be able to also say, no, that is actually not a critical infrastructure. The risk category is not high, so it should not be categorized as a critical infrastructure. Thank you so much, Honorable Mayor.
Thank you very much, Uepi. Just one follow-up, Chair. So what would be the what would the council play in making sure that they strengthen the issues of critical infrastructure and making sure that then whoever applies, as you say, that everybody can apply and say maybe this building or whatever can be a critical infrastructure. So what would do you think would be your strength if you become one of the council to say this will be our strength in making sure that we prevent everyone from applying and thinking that everything will be a critical infrastructure?
Thank you so much, Honorable Member. So I think my personal strength that I'll bring into the council to ensure that we do not get to a point where we are overwhelmed and bombarded with all those applications is to be able to evaluate the applications, review them very specifically in alignment with the policy intention. So we have to go back to the policy to understand what is the policy, what does it require, so that we can be able to implement correctly. Because if you do not go back to the policy, always have the policy in mind, what is the policy intention? What does the policy want to achieve? And now we have these applications. Are these applications speaking to the policy? So you must be able to evaluate properly the application, to assess them in accordance to the policy. And you must also have clear guidelines, and you must have clear standards that you have developed, and you must have a clear criteria as well. The criteria is specified in the Act, but you might have to unpack that at an implementation level to make it more clearer so that our people can understand what is a critical infrastructure before they apply. Thank you so much, Honourable Member.
Yes, Honourable Shaikima.
Thank you. Why do you believe, Doctor, that they will be inundated with application? I'm not sure about that. We know the key points. We understand the critical infrastructure. And I think what we're looking for is for it to be better managed, better secured, given what is happening not only in the country but in many other parts of the country, the acts of terrorism, sabotage, and a whole lot of things together. So why do you believe that you're going to be inundated with applications rather than that you'll be inundated with challenges of how to manage and secure these things, working with all the other relevant departments and things that may, because remember some of these things overlap from one department to another and things. So I think maybe the emphasis, that's what I need to know, why? Why do you feel that rather than the emphasis being on how it's going to be managed and secured, working with the other strategic players like SAPS and security industry, identifying a potential threat to intelligence and things, rather than where you feel that maybe you wait to be spending most of your time with dealing with applications, to be honest with you.
Thank you, Honorable. Sheikh Imam, I think in my reading of the act, I was just trying to find out where that was, but in the act itself. But the definition of infrastructure, it says a building, center, establishment, facility, installation, premises, systems for functions of society, government, or enterprise in the Republic. That is broad. For many people, it can mean anything. It can be a hospital. It can be any building. So that is why I'm thinking that the guidelines that will follow, and the standards and the criteria, will actually help us. Because in the previous act, we had about 204 national key points or roundabout. So there's a potential that now, with this broader definition, there could be an understanding that maybe more things could be called national or critical infrastructure. So I think for me the important thing is that not everything is critical infrastructure. So I think what you are alluding to, Honourable Member, is that the important thing is not to look at the applications per se, but to actually look at the coordination of the whole critical infrastructure process, securing those buildings, ensuring that there is maximum security, that those buildings are correctly categorized with the right risk category, and that the owners of those premises or those who are the custodians are able to provide that custody.
Can I just quick follow-up on that? No, you are correct to a very large extent, but I'm not insinuating that your emphasis should not also be on new applications. You won't get that, there's no doubt about it. Because remember, from time to time, we're putting up new structures, new institutions, so you're going to get that as well. So it's basically a mix of both, but I think your emphasis will be controlling that entire environment. Also dealing with the application that you will also get the emergency side. I think it's a mix of both in any event. But to a larger extent, once you've got them, or let me put it in simple terms, that we've identified them,
yes.
Most of your effort is going to be protecting them and managing them and seeing what's going on.
Yes.
You'll get an odd application coming here and there, you know, as they are being put up.
All right, thank you very much for Honorable Sheikh Imam. Honorable Majosi, are you happy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Honorable de Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Doctor, thank you. I am aware that you touched on, quite a bit of the question that I'm going to ask you when you answered the follow-up question asked by the Honorable Majosi. But here it comes. Name the key strength, and here's the difference, from a technical and leadership perspective, which you will bring to the CIC if you are appointed, and what do you think are your areas of growth? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair Branch. I think my key strength is that I bring to the Council knowledge of monitoring and evaluation, specifically policy evaluation. So currently I'm an academic and I teach public policy. So I look at public policies in general, and the key thing in public policy is that we make all these wonderful policies, but at the end of the day we need to make sure that the policies are implemented. So policy implementation is critical. So that is the key strength that I bring, because with evaluation, what do we mean by evaluation? When we evaluate government programs, we evaluate programs after they have been implemented. So a policy is implemented, then after some time, we have to go back now and say, okay, has this policy in the manner and the way it has been implemented, has it achieved its outcomes? So at some point, the Critical Infrastructure Act will have to be evaluated to say, we passed the act, it has been implemented. In the way it is being implemented now, 5 years down the line, or 10 years down the line, the policy intentions, have they been achieved? That is when evaluation comes in. So evaluation is critical. Policy evaluation, that is the key strength that I bring. The other key strength that I bring is understanding the risk framework, understanding risk at an implementation level. So I will understand what is low risk, medium risk, and high risk. That is something that I bring as well. So also having sat in audit and risk committees, I understand what is good governance. I have an understanding of my fiduciary duty as a member of the Council, and my key objective is to contribute towards good outcomes and good developmental outcomes. So to answer your question, Honorable Ter Blanche, is that my key strengths are coming from the risk side, the evaluation, monitoring side, and fiduciary responsibilities, good governance, and policy evaluation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You may do a follow-up question, Honorable Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Doctor, in a way, you know, you are going to be, if appointed with the other people, you are going to be pioneers in this area as far as South Africa is concerned, and it's quite obvious that you really sort of acquainted yourself quite well of the responsibilities going with that. Are you aware globally of any cutting edge, let's call it cutting edge technology, that can possibly be introduced in this environment to improve or enhance the management of this critical infrastructure? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Tablach. I'm not specifically aware of particular cutting-edge technology, but I do know that when it comes to cyber security, our security apparatus will have to be on their toes, will have to be on the cutting edge, because we have to be a step ahead in terms of making sure that we have excellent cyber security, because that is the next frontier that we have to protect. when we talk about security of our infrastructure, because cyber threats are becoming quite a reality. So I would assume that as the council, we'll have to make sure that we upskill ourselves in understanding not just the physical security of our infrastructure, but the cyber security as well. So knowledge of ICT at a more advanced level will be very critical for the council as a whole. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you very much. I see you have the necessary qualifications from a management point of view. However, you don't have much experience in the field of security itself. But added to that is the fact that you have your own company. I'd like you to tell me how would that impact if you were appointed, the fact that you have, and you're a director, I think, of Duvalele Evaluation Advisory. Will there not be a conflict of interest if you are appointed onto this council?
Thank you so much, Honorable Sheikh Imam. I do not foresee any conflict of interest whatsoever. So my own consultancy, it's a small consultancy, one-man show, where as and when I get a requirement to assist with a report or monitoring an evaluation of something, then I assist there. But I do not think that it poses any conflict of interest. In terms of experience on security, that is correct. I have not worked with the police, but I understand the policy intentions of the Act. And what it aims to achieve, and I think based on that, I am quite au fait and quite comfortable in understanding the Act itself and its requirements on security. Thank you so much.
Honorable Sheikh Imam, do you have a next question, please?
I want to open up a question. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, very important question, and this is based on the, I think you will understand where I come from, based on what is happening in the country with the high levels of corruption, not that it doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, it does. Have you ever been criminally charged and or convicted, or had serious allegations of corruption, fraud? And when I say allegations, it's because sometimes people are not convicted, but there are serious allegations against them that have not been tested, or fraud, theft, or have been brought before disciplinary hearings for either gross insubordination, absenteeism, dereliction of duty, etc.
I can comfortably say no, Chairperson, through you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Moss. Stakeholders' relationships. Many think key stakeholders' relationship is an important responsibility of the CIC. At times, stakeholders can be very demanding. Describe how you manage unreasonable stakeholders' expectations.
Thank you so much, Honorable Moss, for your question. I think stakeholder management is quite critical at this level because what happens is that all stakeholders have their preconceived idea of what is success or what needs to be done. So the important thing as the council because it's a multi-stakeholder critical infrastructure space where we work with the private sector, we work with the civil society and with government, is that we all have to have a clear understanding of what we need to achieve. And when stakeholders have different understanding or different views, the important thing is that we need to have a conversation, a clear understanding and of what it is that we're trying to achieve. So on my side, I think the important thing is to communicate with the stakeholders to find out where are the differences and to come to some sort of a point where we agree, because we may not always agree, but we can meet each other halfway. So in this instance, the important thing is that we are here to fulfill the Act, to implement the Act together as civil society, private sector and government. And so if there are any disagreements among the stakeholders, we will have to resolve those by communicating with each other and finding out where are the differences and seeing whether we can resolve those. Thank you so much, Honourable
Mayor. Thank you, Honourable Mayor. That's the last question.
Thank you, Chairperson. When these stakeholders are very demanding and their demands conflict with your own ethics and values, and you try to negotiate but you don't seem to succeed, what do you think has to give in between your personal convictions and stakeholder demands? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honourable Meshwe. I think as a council member, the most important thing is that I'll speak for myself, the most important thing is that my ethical conduct is quite important, and I would not be in a position to abdicate that under any circumstances, because my ethics and in believing what is right and what is wrong, that cannot be abdicated, or that cannot be put what should I say, marginalized or put to the back burner. So your ethical conduct at all times as a council member must be upheld, and if any request or any requirement that comes from stakeholders is in opposition to that, then there is a problem. It's not acceptable. You might have to, or I might have to discuss to find a point where we can agree without me sacrificing my ethics. So as a leader, my ethical conduct comes first. So if whatever the stakeholders want to be done with regards to the work that we're doing is opposed to my ethical conduct, then that will be a problem. And I would have to voice that objection, obviously, and say, I object in this instance because this is not in accordance to my views, or it's unethical.
Thank you very much, Doc. That is the last question I can allow. You've given us quite detailed responses. As the chairperson, I'm the one who manages time. So I'm very satisfied with the responses you've given. Would there be anything you'd like to ask us?
Yes, Chairperson. I wanted to just find out, I think you did briefly mention the process, but I think as I leave here now, I just want to get a clear understanding as to what will be the next process going forward.
Firstly, we did you, there's an application which we monitor. We reprocessed the advertisement. So if we sent out the first round of advertisements and we do not receive sufficient applicants, we then re-advertise, which we did. You applied, we shortlisted as a committee, we shortlisted. Those shortlisted candidates were sent for the first round of vetting through the State Security Agency. And then of the shortlisted candidates who were then allowed and vetted, we then doing 20 interviews. Those interviews we hope to conclude by tomorrow. But Parliament is in recess. So these members have come from the recess period to sit here physically. Being that if we did the interviews virtually, we had no control over the security matters, if the person had access to another gadget, if you Google answers and so. So it was just sort of the quality assurance and the security mechanisms and standard control, standardizing the interviews, which then forced us to have physical interviews. That comes with its own complexities. So during the recess, we'll now be required to interview one more candidate who has taken ill. So unfortunately, we cannot disadvantage a candidate due to ILIA. By August, the Parliament resumes its function. We then take the shortlisted 10 candidates back to the committee, because this is not the full committee, for approval by the committee. We then refer the approved candidates to the House, which will be in August. Once it's approved by the National Assembly, it goes to the Minister, and the Minister then appoints 5 candidates. From we to the public candidates and civil society, private participants in private sector and in civil society. The Department of Defense, Home Affairs, Public Works, Disaster Management, Local Government, South African Police Services, State Security Agency, they each have a candidate on the Critical Infrastructure Council, so they bring an additional 7 members to the council. So the council is very balanced. We give the 5 to the minister, 10 to the minister, he selects 5. Of course, we are looking at gender balance, youth, geographical spread, and the national question. So we would like those 5 candidates who are eventually selected by the minister to represent the gender, race, and class, whether it's across the spectrum. Civil society can be from the working class. You don't all need to have PhDs. What we're looking at is a critical understanding of the work that is required and how you respond to the questions which we have asked. Because you may have candidates who are very well qualified but not suitable for the position which we are interviewing for. But thank you very much. And you're from Cape Town?
Yes, I'm from Cape Town.
Oh, so you still live here? All right, so but where did you travel from?
No,
where did you travel from? Did you travel in last night?
No, I was here for
5 minutes. Okay, all right then. Thank you very much for availing yourself for the interview. We will certainly let you know what happened. But please do not accuse us of being long-winded and that we are taking so long and that we are inefficient and ineffective. My staff will tell you, if you give me something to read or sign, I'll do it that very same day and respond to you by the latest tomorrow. Unfortunately, we are all governed by certain prescripts of the law and the processes of Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairmembers. Members of Parliament. Thank you so much.
Please sanitize your hands. We are very worried and conscious of protocols, COVID protocols. Honorable members, you would see that on your table you have hand sanitizers. Please sanitize your hands. Don't go to that coffee machine without the hand sanitized, because we all perceive that same floss. Please, Honorable Sheikh, can you sanitize?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. When you are ready, we are ready for the next candidate. That would be Mr. Cyril Smith. Honorable members, you do understand that I am managing time. So if we get towards the end and I do not give you an opportunity to ask a question, Honorable Sheikh Imam, you realize I'm managing time, eh? We started at 10:25 and we ended at 11:25.